Hello, and welcome to episode 12 of the East Anglian Theatre Podcast. Welcome back, and what a week it's been. Climate change momentarily gave the UK a taste of what it's like to be in the deserts of Kuwait, only with more whinging on social media. For my part, the weather meant I was encouraged to walk around the house with minimal clothes on until I accidentally caught sight of myself in a mirror and realised what I was inflicting on the eyes of my family and my beloved pets. Anyway, like the brave little soldier that I am, I made it through and managed to record this podcast in the searing heat. Yes, my laptop might be covered in my bodily fluid and not the usual type. And yes, my recording studio might now smell like the changing room of a men's rugby team. But if that's what it takes to bring you content you never asked for, then it's all been worth it. Probably. If you haven't yet familiarised yourself with me, my name's Ray Tempesta, and I am your host. The unwelcome wedding guest, if you will, that you forgot you'd invited. The person who will single-handedly clear a dance floor with his terrible moves, and also because of my body odour currently. I'm here to take you by the rather clammy hand and guide you through a bit of what's on offer theatre-wise in the East Anglian region. For those new to the podcast, firstly, hello, and secondly, here's how it works. The podcast is split into three parts. Part one is where I tell you a little bit about what I've been up to theatre-wise recently. Most often, this will be a review of a show that I've attended locally, but there will be the occasional sort of audio blog, if you like, where I let you in on some other things that I've involved myself in. Part two is where you get to hear from a guest, or sometimes multiple guests if the company I'm involving can't settle an argument about who wants to do the interview. Their primary focus is to tell you about an upcoming show, and I intersperse it with the occasional stupid question like, "Are you excited?" or "Do you like acting?" Michael Parkinson, I am not. Part three is the bit that I put the least amount of thought into because I usually just read out a bastardised version of a company's description of their show. It's the part where I briefly shine a spotlight on a few shows in the East Anglian region coming up in the next few weeks that have caught my eye. But first, here's the obligatory bit where I have to promote my website and social media pages. There is a website and social media pages. Will that do? Okay, I suppose I'd better expand on that. The website is eatpod.co.uk. That's eatpod.co.uk. You'll find all episodes of the podcast, written versions of my reviews, and a page where you can contact me to tell me about upcoming shows that you'd like me to mention, or if you'd like to go through the ordeal of meeting me and being subjected to my stupid line of questioning. There's also Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts. They do the usual job of social media accounts, providing just enough words and pictures to distract you momentarily from your sorry little lives, but neither do they change your lives or leave any lasting impact. You could question what the point of them is, and believe you me, the thought has occurred to me many, many times since no one interacts with them anyway. Now that's taken care of, what have I been up to theatre-wise this time round? Well, I didn't get the chance to see any shows this week, for the first time in probably a couple of months. I had a few commitments in the evening this week, and I also conducted some interviews for the podcast on a couple of the evenings this week, so I just haven't had time. If I had had the time, I really would have liked to have seen DN25's production of Zorro the Musical at the Apex Theatre in Bury St Edmunds. Other than looking like a brilliant show, it also featured a friend of mine, Alex Telling, who I would have loved to have seen in action again. If anyone has seen it, though, do let me know what you thought. As I haven't taken in any theatre this week, I thought I'd let you know about something that I'm involved in instead. A few weeks ago on the podcast, I mentioned that I was preparing for an audition for a play called The Welkin. Well, I'm happy to report that I was cast in the show. The role I'll be playing is a character called Mr. Coombs. Now, I could tell you about him, but the play's not really about him or any other man for that matter. The role of women in society is very much the focal point of the play, and as such, it's the women that really tell the story and lead the proceedings. The Welkin takes place in 1759 on the Norfolk-Suffolk border. The story centres around a character called Sally Poppy, who is sentenced to hang for an awful murder. No idea why I just said awful. I don't suppose there's any particularly delightful forms of murder. Anyway, Sally claims to be pregnant, and so a jury of 12 women are taken, mostly against their will, to decide whether she's telling the truth, or simply feigning pregnancy to try and escape the noose. All of the characters play fundamental roles, but there's one of the 12 that form the jury who sticks out in the play, as she's the only one initially prepared to defend Sally and appears a little more fair-minded than the others. The crux of the story centres around the women's deliberations whilst kept locked up in a room guarded by the local bailiff and seemingly general odd-job man, Mr. Coombs, who is my character. The play really is extraordinary and absolutely superbly written, and I can't wait to get started with rehearsals for it. It's very rare that I read a script and am gripped and absolutely rapt by it, but I really was with this one. I really didn't care what role I took, or even if I had to, you know, help out backstage. I just wanted to be involved in it in some way. It really is an incredible piece. As it happens, the part I've been offered is a brilliant one and offers a fantastic opportunity to try some things a little more on the physical side. But I'll keep you updated on how the rehearsals are going once they get started. Speaking of rehearsals, and these will be taking place mostly at the Sewell Barn Theatre in Norwich, and I'll be rehearsing and performing, of course, alongside a couple of people that I know and have worked with before. However, there is a whole bunch of new people that I'm also excited to get to work with. Again, I'll let you know a bit about some of the people involved in the show a little bit later down the line, and who knows, if they're not all sick of me by then, they might even agree to feature as guests on the podcast. For now, though, I'm just concentrating on getting the lines nailed early doors. I'm on holiday for a couple of weeks starting next week, so I'll be taking my script with me to read when I get bored of the Catalonian landscape. Also, I should mention, with me going on holiday, there may be a slightly longer gap between episodes. I have recorded a few interviews recently for subsequent podcasts, and I'm trying to sneak in a couple of shows just before I go away, but even so, I do genuinely plan to put my feet up and try not to think about theatre for a little bit. But now, moving on to the main feature, and I'd like to introduce you to someone who, although not a native to this region, and that will become blindingly obvious once he starts speaking, he's made our wonderful region his home and the base for the company that he co-founded, Quill and Inkling Theatre Company. His name is Ivan Wilkinson, and he's currently in the middle of a tour, not strictly an East Anglian one, but we'll overlook that, of his very own adaptation of the novel called The Prisoner of Zender. He's here with me now, so without further ado, which is a shame because I do so enjoy an ado, here is an interview with Ivan Wilkinson. Hi there, Ivan. Thanks for joining me when you could be out in the sun scorching your eyebrows off or something.
I don't need bother at all, but I'm a northerner, so it's the sun doesn't do me very well. I don't trust it.
Right. Now, firstly, your company, Quill and Inkling, they've been going since 2014, but I wondered if you could offer a bit of insight into what prompted you and Beth to set the company up.
I met Beth I remember a few years ago, back 2012, I think it was, we did a children's show together. And we sort of got on really well during that time. We kept in touch. And as we were kept in touch, we found out we had sort of similar outlooks, similar ideas about things. So we thought this idea of why not put something on ourselves. So we cast about. We did a couple of speculative things, looking for a style, if you like, something to do. And we got employed by a school in Northumberland to put on little fairy stories for the kids and show them a little bit of sword work that I'm doing, because I had just written a version of Kidnapped, which toured nationally. And on the back of that, we got involved with we touted ourselves to English Heritage, who took us up in performing a few things around Northumberland, first of all. And we sort of developed some historical ideas and historical shows. And now we tend to do a lot of historically themed things and fun things for English heritage sites up and down the country. And that's sort of how we established ourselves. We always wanted to do more full-length theatrical things. So last year, a few years ago, we tried our first show, which we put a lot of money into and lost a lot of money into and learned a lot of lessons. And last year, we tried it again with the Scarlet Pimpernel, which toured, which was an open-air tour last year, which did quite well. And this year, we followed up with The Prisoner of Zender.
I mentioned the remaining performances of the Prisoner of Zender tour on the podcast last week, but what I didn't do was explain the story.
Aha!
But I gather it's based on a novel, which, as you can tell, I haven't read. So for heathens like myself, could you tell us a bit more?
Okay. The Prison of Zenda was written in 1894 by Anthony Hope, who was a lawyer at the time. And he wrote this at the time. It was this sort of adventure stories were all the rage in sort of the second half of the Victorian period. And so he wrote it as a bit of an adventure in that ilk. Of a very a very long shot coincidence and slightly ridiculous plot, but it's good fun for a young man who has a bit of an income from his parents' will, so he doesn't really feel the need to do anything. Decides to pop off to the Eastern European country of Ruritania for a bit of a jaunt because family scandal is that one of his great, however many ago, grandmothers was a little too close to one of the previous kings of Ruritania. And so every now and then he is, there's a child of this family that's born with distinctive looks. So he goes off to Ruritania and would you know it, he's an absolute double for the king who's just about to be crowned. But he walks straight into a plot whereby the king's half-brother is trying to stage a coup. So the king is kidnapped. And then so someone who looks the part has to step in and save the coronation, save the king, and save the day. And it's all very hip, hip, hooray and all that sort of thing.
And this isn't the first novel you've adapted into a stage production, of course. Presumably the process of adaptation is one that you enjoy.
There's a certain challenge involved. I, for instance, for Prison of Zenda, I knew that I had a cast of four maximum. So there's a bit of a challenge in how do I get the spirit of the novel over, if you like, and how do I incorporate all of the necessary characters with just four people? So a lot of the bad baddies, if you like, have been sort of condensed into one character, and I've had to employ a little bit of elements of each, and the certain elements of the plot have been moved into other places, and different scenes have to have a slightly different flavour because I have to get plot elements in without just sitting there and saying, now this happened, now that happened then. So and trying to get them in and make them sound as naturally flowing as possible in the scene as that goes. And I quite enjoy that sort of challenge. Adapted a few novels now. I started off with Kidnapped and The Three Musketeers that I did for Baroque Theatre Company, and that also toured nationally. And then last year, Scarlet Pimpernel, and now Prisoner of Zenda. And now all these sort of, they all seem to be the sort of swashbuckling sort of types. So that's quite, and clearly I have a style.
That ties in nicely with your love of stage combat.
Yes, indeed. I studied that. I went to drama school and I started doing stage combat down in drama school at Mount View Academy of Theatre Arts. And me and a friend of mine, Claire, we both started to pursue combat, stage combat a little bit more outside of that. So over the few years afterwards, I went along those qualification levels you can do. And I went and did all the possible qualification levels at the time. And for a while, I was a jobbing actor-fighter, going around doing fights on film sets and things, and where you run up in lots of different wigs and make the lead actor look great and then die in very interesting ways, which was good fun for a little while. But it's sort of the actor bug was still there, so I decided to pursue it slightly differently. But yes, sword fighting and the swashbuckling style and that sort of thing is—it's all good fun. Mm. I remember watching a lot of old films and stuff when I was a kid. So I just—it's that sort of thing. I just want to sort of recreate because I found it really good fun when I was a kid, and I'd like other people to experience the fun and joy of it as well.
And alongside combat side of things, it seems that Quill and Inkling has many strings to their bow. But could you tell us a bit more about some of the other work that you do outside of producing shows? Mm.
Certainly. Well, in Quill and Inkling, well, we work a lot with English heritage at the moment. And so obviously we write and we research our own things as well. So when English heritage sometimes put on events, specific events, then we do a lot of research based around whatever historical period is they are going for in that particular instance. For example, there was a theme of kids rule one year. We wrote to do Scarborough Castle. And I had a wonderful time looking at old documents because we thought we'd do a show about the children's school strikes of 1911. And I sort of quite like researching. So we like to research things there. I've done another one where we did something for Halloween. And so we did something on the history of witchcraft. And I read a large swathe of the Malleus Maleficarum, which is an ancient Catholic, well, it's Catholic, I don't think it's official, it's a sect of Catholic, it's an old doctrine of basically how do you identify and question witches. from way back in the late 1400s. So I read a lot of it, and it's absolutely impenetrable. So I watched a few lectures on it. And because I was reading the Malleus Maleficarum, which I have to say is an incredibly misogynistic book, because it's all dealing with women and how what evil things women do, although men can be witches too, of course. It messed up with my YouTube algorithms for weeks afterwards. I was like, oh, dear me. So next time I'll do that in incognito mode. It's like, oh, dear me, it's a thing. But the other things we do, because we do little events, I spend a lot of my time playing with fire and things like that. I'm all for special effects. So I learned fire breathing and body burning for our witchcraft show. And I've just learned, and I haven't been able to put into a show yet, I've got a friend in LA who teaches me these things. I've just learned how to set my arm on fire and or my leg. So I'm going to be trying to put that into a show as soon as I can.
What could possibly go wrong?
Well, exactly. Playing with fire is cool. Which is clearly is the lesson of the day. I play around with all sorts of things. I've got some blank firing pistols, blank firing guns, which we put in. We've got one in the Prisoner of Zenda, for instance. We do that. But also, we try to be a little bit socially responsible, even though we're around having a lot of fun. For this particular tour, we're trying to raise money for some charities. We're able to do that because the Suffolk Council, I think, bought some of the shows in and subsidise some of the ticket sales. So we're trying to give a little back in that way.
I wanted to ask you a few questions really about the touring process as well. It's one that I'd not really been involved with until earlier this year. And with the show that I was in, I think in particular, our set was probably far too cumbersome to make it a practical touring production. Mm-hmm. I guess what I'm asking, how long have you been doing touring shows and what have you learned over the years?
Well, I've been a jobbing actor since I graduated drama school in 2003, and the majority of the shows that I've been in since then were touring. So I've learned a lot of what not to do from my early experiences. A lot of it I find is planning. If you manage to sort out your schedule so you have time to plan, time to work things through, you can erase a lot of issues if you've planned it well. You can't get rid of everything. There'll always be something to panic over. For instance, our set is two flats, which are both too large to fit into my van. So I've had to cut them into three pieces. And I've only got a very small van. And then I build them when we arrive at a venue. But it seems to work. It's worked so far. Everything else is reasonably tour friendly. We have things like we've got a big chest, which we love. It's our little treasure chest, which is able to carry a lot of the extraneous things in and fits in the van just nicely. If I could only fit all the costumes in, it'd be great. But fortunately, I have to iron them very regularly because they get squashed up against everything else. Touring wise, there's always something to worry about, but as long as I know sort of as early as possible what my tour schedule is, then I can plan around most things. And my set I've deliberately designed to fit into my van, and I've been sort of obsessing over that and how I'm going to do it for a few months.
And on the remaining venues you've got in this current tour, are they all venues you've played before?
Not all of them, no. We have a few churches, and we haven't been to some of the churches before. Mm. It's a new thing for us, which is really exciting because we wanted to do a church gig way back 2015, I think, when we were starting to set things up. We were really keen to do a church gig there, and it fell through. And I tried to get some other churches involved now, but we found our way in, and finally we're getting back to what we originally planned, which is really, really quite nice.
Now, I hate to be very British and talk about the weather. With things as they are, and some of your shows being staged outdoors, yes, the weather is a little bit of a concern at the moment.
It is a little bit of a concern. You'd think that having nice bright sunshine would be a boon for outdoor theatre. But a lot of our shows are in sort of early evening, and the fact that we've had such stringent weather warnings have played a little bit in. Like I say, the council subsidised one of our tickets, and one of our shows got postponed partly because of fears over the weather. So it's something we're keeping an eye on. Obviously, we don't want to put anyone in danger. That's not the point at all. But it is something just to be aware of. especially being outside and people are sitting around in that sweltering heat.
It's possibly more of a concern for you guys, actually, in a way, because you're the ones that are probably dressed slightly more inappropriately.
Well, yes. I actually get away quite nicely with that sort of thing, having sort of written and directed it. I've sort of given myself the easy part. But no, the rest of the cast, they have these sort of military jackets things, so like sort of woolen jackets, things to wear. And I feel for them at times. They come off and they're absolutely soaked. They've been working very hard and they've been out in the sunshine. And it is a bit of a concern. But we keep on top of it as best we can. I try to insist that they drink a lot of water, take enough breaks, sun cream, and we stay in the shade as much as we can as well.
Moving on to your own experiences, and do you happen to remember the first show that you watched?
I remember several shows when I was a kid. I remember my favourite one, but the first one I watched was probably a pantomime. My parents would have taken me to a pantomime. It would have been in my local town of Blythe, because my local theatre company used to do a fairly decent panto, actually, every year. It was quite famous at one point, and I'll have to say if it's still going, but probably something like Cinderella or something like that. We had quite nice special effects and big things going off, and it's all very ooh for a kid. So it's probably that. I can't fully remember the first one, but I do remember when they started to make a big impression on me. I went to see a production of, it was an ensemble piece of Beowulf at the Newcastle Theatre Royal. As it was truly ensemble, it was nice movement pieces. They had some tribal chanting for the Anglo-Saxons and the Geats and all of this. And they had these sticks which they would clash together for warring scenes, but they'd also lock together to make practical standing platforms and things. And they could lock these sticks together and put a board down and walk across them. I thought it was brilliant. And the Grendel, the monster, was a shadow puppet, came in and had some shadow puppets of him ripping the men's heads off. And I thought that was brilliant. So I was well into that when I was a kid. And then in the second half, and the crown passed over to the older Beowulf, and they had the dragon coming in from the audience, which didn't have a dragon, but I was convinced there was one just because of how well everyone was acting. And I was quite young. Yeah, it was. I remember all of that, and I thought it was wonderful. I thought I want to be part of something like that.
Clearly, that had a lasting impression on you. So from there, when did you get your start in theatre?
Well, that theatre company that in my hometown that did the pantomimes, the Phoenix Theatre Company, I joined them and I did quite a few things in amateur theatre. I went on to study performing arts when I left school at 16, went to college to do performing arts. From there, I actually got into another youth theatre, which is the Live Theatre on Newcastle Quayside. And also the Newcastle Playhouse had a playgroup as well. So I was fairly regular at those two. And from sort of then on, I got to hear about things. And I managed to get, when I was about 17, I managed to get two jobs. Playing a little drug dealer in a BBC series and an advert for McDonald's. And then I went to drama school and everyone went quiet for a few years. So I peaked too soon.
And you're obviously partially responsible for your own destiny, being a writer and deciding what you do. But do you have a dream show to be sort of involved in, or even perhaps a novel that you would love to adapt for the stage?
Oh, yes, absolutely. People who know me will know that I'm very enthusiastic about Alexandre Dumas. And I was very lucky when I was involved in that Three Musketeers that I told you about, because I wrote that and directed it. There are two Dumas novels which I absolutely love and adore. And Three Musketeers is one of them. That particular version was more tailored towards children. I'd love to do a more adult version of The Three Musketeers. I think that would go down a storm. But as well as that, I think it's going to be a toss-up between that and my very favourite novel of all time, which is The Count of Monte Cristo. I absolutely love that. I read that when I was a teenager. I wasn't at school for a few days.
That's Dumas as well, isn't it?
That's Dumas as well, yeah. That's Alexandre Dumas I absolutely love as a writer. I read it over a good few days when I wasn't at school, when I was a teenager. And it was one of those page-turning books, I just couldn't put it down. And it's one of those things when you're a teenager, things you love ever more deeply, and you remember them all for the rest of your life, and how wonderful it was and all of that. So yeah, the Count of Monte Cristo is, I still have the same book that I read when I was a teenager. It's in my house on my bookshelf. So it's, absolutely. I have written a version of it, but so far it's been, I don't have the money. It's been too impractical to stage. So I'm going to have a look at that and see if I can do it. But I'd love to put that on stage as well.
How about, isn't the follow-up to Three Musketeers, isn't that 20 years after?
Yes, there's, well, the In an ideal world, I'd love to get to be able to do a season of the Musketeers novels. There's the Three Musketeers, and people tend to only ever do the first half of the Three Musketeers as well, because coming back with the Diamond Studs is only half the novel. They then go off to do fight at the Siege of La Rochelle, and it'll go off and do that. And the famous film in the 70s split it into two films, of course. But the Three Musketeers, there's 20 years after. Then there's the Louise de la Vallière, the Vicomte de Bragelonne, and the Man in the Iron Mask are all in the Musketeers saga, if you like. And it'll be a lovely project to sort of put them all in rep one after the other for 6 weeks of summer or something, and be able to just have a swashbuckling summer. That'll be fantastic.
And just getting back to The Prisoner of Zenda, you've got quite a few dates remaining, actually. Where can we get tickets?
You can go to our webpage, which is www.quillandinkling.com/events. So that's quill as in pen and inkling as in a small thought.
Yeah, well, that's about all we've got time for. So I'll let you go out and enjoy the sunshine and try not to get burnt.
Well, I'll do my best. This orangey thing in the sky. I'm not quite sure about it. But if I may put in with a little fact that I found out recently. Prisoner of Zenda is very famous for inventing a genre of books and films and plays, which is those set in fictional, usually European countries. In the novel, Anthony Hope invented the country of Ruritania. And so now they're called Ruritanian romances, as anything set in a fictional country. And I was challenged last year by Beth, because I love Halloween, and she loves all these Christmas shows, to watch some Christmas shows. So I gritted my teeth and watched a Christmas show last year. And it was some American journalist girl goes to a fictional European country and meets a prince. And they have this Disney-like affair and then fall in love. But it's a Ruritanian romance. So all these things still getting made today, fictional European countries, still Ruritanian romances. I find it interesting anyway.
Well, no, it's something I hadn't heard of before. Some knowledge I may well retain.
A pub quiz sometime somewhere. Though.
Absolutely, definitely. It'll spark a thought somewhere. I won't win anything, but, you know, that'll be one question I get right.
If it's a tiebreaker, then that's your quid's in.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, thanks for your time and the bonus fact.
No problem. Thank you.
So there we have it. That was Ivan Wilkinson. You can catch him and the other members of Quill and Inkling on their tour of The Prisoner of Zenda at one of the remaining dates in East Anglia. Now, I'm a bit later than intended with getting this podcast out, but if I'm quick, and you are too, you can catch an afternoon performance at Whitlingham Country Park near Norwich, where I'll be watching them, armed with a picnic. This is followed by dates in Canterbury and Dover in mid-August, if you really fancy a road trip to watch the show, before they then head back to the region for a performance at Bellevue Park in Sudbury on the 14th of August, St John the Baptist Church in Wisbeach on the 19th of August, St Mary's Church in Pakenham on the 20th, and finally St Michael's Church in Farndish on the 21st. As Ivan mentioned, tickets can be purchased from quillandinkling.com, and for the avoidance of doubt, I'll post links to the shows on my social media pages too. Now, what else is coming up in the region in the next week or two? Well, Thetford Players are looking for auditionees for their January pantomime, set to be Puss in Boots. The auditions are on Saturday the 6th of August at the Terrapin in Thetford, and you can visit thetfordplayers.co.uk for more information. Over in Suffolk, there is auditions taking place for the Company of Four's production of Goodnight Mr. Tom. There's one round of auditions taking place on Sunday the 24th of July, another on the 26th of July, and the last one on the 29th of July. All of them take place at the Fred Reynolds Centre in Woodbridge, with the performances set to be in October at the Seckford Theatre. Staying in Suffolk, the Southwold Arts Centre is playing host to a play called The Nightingales by Peter Quilter. It's a rom-com set in the fabulous 50s and centres around the tales of the Nightingales, who are a two-generation theatrical family. It's described as charming, effervescent and heartwarming, and even better than that, it gives you the opportunity to visit the lovely town of Southwold. And it's on from the 2nd to the 6th of August. And finally, the Sheringham Little Theatre's in-house group is performing the thriller Wait Until Dark from the 9th to the 13th of August. It's a great show, but for those that haven't come across it yet, it's set in London in the 60s, where three con men are tracing the whereabouts of a mysterious doll. They track it down to an apartment where it's been unwittingly transported across the Canadian border, containing a supply of heroin by an unsuspecting couple. They target the wife, Susie, who is blind, and each try to convince her to hand over the doll. Now, whilst I'm not gutted to be on holiday shortly, I am sad that I won't get to see the show. But if you are lucky enough to see it, as with the show at Southwold, Sheringham is a lovely place to be in the summertime. As usual, I'll post links for the shows and auditions mentioned on the social media pages. And of course, do feel free to share them or even get in touch with me to let me know about any other upcoming shows or auditions. And that's about all I have time for. Thanks so much for listening to me and Ivan ramble on this time. It really does mean a lot. I'm off to slather myself in sun cream and watch The Prisoner of Zenda. Why not join me? Sun cream, of course, is optional, but advisory. Anyway, I'll see you next time, and in the meantime, take care of yourselves and go watch some theatre. Bye.